Hi everyone, 欢迎来到酒馆，在这里遇见更广阔的世界。来微信公众号露露的英文小酒馆和同名视频号，不错过每天的推文和视频。在公众号下方菜单进入酒馆铺子，逛逛世界好物，或者添加小助手微信 LULUXJG。另外，露露和安澜现在基本每天都在微信视频号直播，干货多多，欢乐满满。关注视频号露露的英文小酒馆，和我们相约直播间吧。Now.On with the show. Hi everyone and welcome back to the show. Today we have in our studio two special guests. One of them you may still remember from our previous episodes on Prosecco. So Matteo is from Italy. He's a wine expert and a senior manager in sales and marketing at the largest wine importer in China. He has extensive experience in the wine industry in promoting Italian wines, including Prosecco in China as well.Now, another interesting fact is that he himself is from Veneto. As some of you might know, that's one of the Prosecco regions. And another guest, new guest, Daisy, she is an expert in brand promotion, specializing in creating demands for foreign brands. Welcome to the show, Matteo, Daisy.
Hi, Lulu.
Hi, Lulu.
So instead of promoting, let's say, Prosecco as a product on its own, you would promote perhaps the Italian lifestyle.The Italian culture and link it with other Italian products as well, maybe Italian food, Italian sauces, and all that. I would like to get Daisy's input on this because you're obviously expert in brand promotion. Does that happen a lot in your area of work, that promoting a lifestyle or life scenario rather than a specific product?
So your question is about whether brands actually would market their products associating it withother aspects instead of just talking about the product itself?
It's more like lifestyle. So you're promoting a lifestyle or like a scenario.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'll give you an example. So Starbucks for many years has been perceived as a very traditional company, and they wanted to expand their audience base to include a younger audience. Otherwise, their key customers are maybe over 35.And they want to reduce the age to maybe 25 or even 18. So how do they do that? They have a lot of crossover brand collaborations with fashion brands.
I see.
Such as Marni, such as Shansha, which is part of the Hermes group. And we once did a campaign with them, and the visual would be very colorful and fashion-oriented to play up the lifestyle association of Starbucks as a coffee brand.So coffee and crossing over to fashion.
So this is crossover.
And that campaign was very successful in attracting younger audience because that's what their eyeballs are paying attention to.
You can actually see this with Manner Coffee. They did some cross collaboration with Louis Vuitton. I don't remember what Louis Vuitton and Dior, I guess, at one point. Not the brand, like Manner Coffee shop everywhere in China, just a few shops.In Plaza 66, around there. And it was pretty interesting because at one point I looked at the queue, and it was a probably 30, 40 minutes queue of people just queuing in front of a like coffee shop to get coffee, just because there was a Louis Vuitton collaboration.
Yeah, the collabing, the crossovers.
Yeah.
So how do both of you think that Prosecco can be promoted? Perhaps not crossing over with another brand necessarily, but how can we promote it not just as a product, but as part of something bigger, say Italian culture, Italian cultural scene? Matteo?
Well, I mean, I talk by experience. Whenever actually I introduce Prosecco, it can be an Italian product anyway.I try to identify the cultural aspects, the familiarity cultural aspect that my target audience has. So with Prosecco, it's very easy because I'm just mentioned Venice. So you can go with Marco Polo. You can go with food like Carpaccio, for instance, which is actually most made in Venice because of a very famous painter in the 1800s was named Carpaccio for his use of red colors.And so on. Or you can go with, again, lifestyle. In Veneto, you got a very like, we are famous for productivity. So kind of famous for working hard, but also enjoying life. And part of that is going to the beach, going to the mountain, and so forth and so on. So I kind of like try to first starting with culture and then telling them, okay, this Prosecco, the history is, you know, is very embedded with the Venice culture. You have Vivaldi, music, so you, you know, you explain the music. Then you got the painting, so as I say, Carpaccio, which is Cimabue, basically. And then food, which is Carpaccio, the food. And then you got tiramisu. So all together, you can literally create a wine tasting based on, with Prosecco, based on these kind of things, right?
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm organizing something like that in probably 3 months. But this is what actually would help the consumers to put Prosecco in the map, even for people that don't know what is Prosecco, where it comes from. And then from there, you can start then with the second tier education level. So to go through more like in brands, so dividing the Prosecco by brands, and then by brands, then you go by regions and blah, blah, blah. But that's, I think, it's pretty interesting and a good way, I think.
Yeah.
To get the consumer, yeah.
To get some attention first. It's like what Daisy mentioned earlier. A lot of the consumers, they are in different stages of their consumer journey. So maybe they don't know anything about Italian wine, but for sure they know Italy, a lot of great art, you know, rich history in art, in music, in gastronomical things. So these kind of things.
And well, I mean, you know, there is a Marco Polo statue in Hanzo.
So that's, okay.
Marco Polo was lived and died in Venice. So I mean, that's the easiest of a connection usually.
Exactly.
I try to joke saying, oh, you know, Marco Polo used to drink a lot of Prosecco, right? Like, really? It might be true, to be honest, because back then there was not the Prosecco as a name, but they were definitely drinking wine. So it's a good connection.
That's a good place to start to establish some common ground. All right. And now I am going to ask both of you, so based on what you know at this current stage, what do you think are some of the successful marketing strategies employed by Prosecco brands or Prosecco region to attract Chinese consumers? Let's maybe direct this question first to Daisy.
I've seen very successful campaigns, but rather where Prosecco is used as a key ingredient, for example, Aperol Spritzer and Campari, they've done a very good job creating rather immersive events for brand promotion. And there's a lot of Prosecco use in this event. I'm not sure if that counts.
Well, I think it counts in certain ways. I know it's not promoting Prosecco on its own, but still you incorporate Prosecco into this whole campaign, right?
Yeah.
What about Matteo? I mean, you probably know, have a little bit more firsthand experience in this.
Yeah, well, we just implement a few strategies. One of them is the one I told you before I'm working on, and I think this is probably very interesting. But then the most important thing is to make the consumers try the wine. So in terms of I go more into some specifics in terms of channels. If you like, for us, on-trade is very important when it comes to interact with our customers and their consumers. So I think one of the best strategies or ways to try to get a nice brunch deal with a hotel.
It's perfect brunch drink.
Because and then the thing is, usually for brunch deals, the people kind of try the Prosecco, but it's the option. So, and then usually I used to actually write down even the information to the Prosecco. What is this? And usually at the opening of the season, the brunch season, we do a tasting event where you introduce the wines. Of course, for hotels, it's a little bit difficult because, I mean, usually they have 100, 200 people coming. But for restaurants, it's very nice because you have the customers book the place. You go there, and before actually everything starts, you can actually introduce the Prosecco that they're drinking. The chef, they introduce the food. And then, so usually also you get it's connected to QR code. They actually can buy the wines directly if they like it. So these actually are pretty good things. And the hotels and restaurants are the ones that I usually love to work with. And then you need to be fun. So with the fun part, it goes into tasting or specific events done in rooftops or specific nice terrace. Like I am actually doing, and I'm not doing just for Prosecco, to be clear, because I realized that you need to give people a good time. And if you give them good time and also some sort of like educational times behind that, they actually learn more about the brand itself, the brands that you are actually offering. And then they, especially if you have a photographer, they take good pictures, actually, they have a lot because they love the pictures.
Yeah.
But then they remember the events, the brands, and especially you try to design specific PSM, like bracelets or stoppers or pins or anything that can help them to remember the day, the night, and they can take something at home.
Yeah.
And it's very, very cute. That's kind of help.
I couldn't agree more. I think what you were talking about, the fun experience with a little bit of knowledge on like new things. Mm. So because we have like 1.5 million following and my audience base is more women, 75% women, maybe between the age of 20 and 45. So they are really eager to try new things, to experience new things. And then I'm sure if they're in Shanghai, they would love to go to your rooftop tasting to get a little bit of knowledge about wine, but more importantly, to enjoy the social aspect of it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've seen a lot of women enjoying wines. Well, I mean, I met Daisy because of wine and because of my company, yes, but we hang out a few times and everything was because we were like, you know, knowing each other, but also knowing the wines that we're drinking. So wines is fantastic. Kind of like a social glue at one point.
Definitely. Social is a social glue, social lubricant. Okay. So now we're coming to the last bit of our chat. So looking forward, what kind of trends do you foresee for Prosecco in terms of promoting it in the Chinese market, especially through maybe some, let's say, newer medium, like, say, social media or the likes? Let's direct this question to Daisy, because you're the brand expert.
Right. When it comes to successful or effective marketing, there are two things to consider. And both two things actually point to the same direction, which is memory. It's based on repetition. So how is the frequency of the marketing effort? When we're looking at something all the time, eventually, let's say Madonna, 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 like it appears within 1 hour of watching TV, it appears 5 times. And then somehow you kind of start thinking about Madonna the next time you get hungry. It's really about frequency. It's kind of like a brainwashing. Sorry to use this word, but really, advertising is really
brainwashing.
An act of brainwashing. Yep. And that's how our memory works. Secondly, how can we create more word of mouth, which is free marketing? Otherwise, all the exposure, you have to invest a lot of money, a lot of capital to create the kind of awareness you might want. It's performance marketing, we call it. So if your content or your event is so engaging and so interesting, so creative, people want to talk about it without you paying them to advertise for you.
Yeah.
Creating some Instagrammable moments.
Yeah, exactly. That's a part of it. Or if you look into Thai advertising, it's hilarious. Once you see the ad and you feel, wow, this is so funny, I have to share it with my friends. Or if it's something very beautiful, for example, Louis Vuitton did an exhibition in Shanghai Exhibition Center, lasted for a few months, and every day there was a line. Why is that? Because it's something that is so special. It's out of our daily life rituals.
Can I add something?
These two things, frequency. Do we show up enough time so that people remember us and then we can influence their choices? Sure. Secondly, it's how strong an impact you create on the memory, so strong that the people have to talk about it. Then you create a lot of free marketing for yourself.
Yeah, maybe I want to ask you to see what Daisy has to say about this, but I also realized that because we're in China, right? So we have to deal with the translations of products. And someone actually made me realize something very interesting last night. I was at this wine dinner and I can't mention any products. It's not an Italian product still, but it's a very famous New Zealand product. And they're like, you know, the Chinese love that wine. Beside the wine, but because the wine in Chinese, the name is just really beautiful. It kind of reminds me of like a cloudy, foggy, but beautiful valley, green with cloud and foggy. And I was like, probably you know what I'm talking about anyway, but I'm like, maybe, and I think maybe, the Chinese translations of a name of products play an actually very important role for local to actually pick the product itself. So I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, to be honest, because my background is in like translation and interpretation. So the power of language, I know the power of language. And I think actually there's a good example. Coca-Cola, when it first came into China, had like a really weird translation, really weird name. So it didn't really take. And then they changed it into Coca-Cola right now. And then that is just so simple, but it just has a lot of positive connotation or relation to in the language. It's just joy and happiness. So this type of, I think that's definitely perhaps the next step when you're introducing specific Prosecco brands into China. Maybe the localization of it, especially when in terms of names.I'm curious in knowing what Daisy has to say about this, obviously from Chinese background as well, and then doing marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. Naming is more important than most people think. There's naming and then also the vocabulary you offer to your audience. I'll give you one example. We did an exercise with Nespresso for their new capsules, and it was impossible for the salespeople in the store to pronounce the Italian names of each capsule. And for the customers, it was very intimidating to try and pronunciate those Italian names. So Nespresso worked with us to create nicknames, Chinese nicknames.
Oh, that's cute.
For their products.
Okay.
Interesting.
In this case, they feel, wow, these products are so friendly and they sound so cute. Cuteness is one of the very popular
point in China,
for Chinese. Being because cute. It resonates just how the culture is. So naming the product, and secondly, giving the vocabulary. Starbucks is such a classical case. They don't just call their coffee sizes small, medium, large. They call it Fenty and Grande. And they sound Italian. These are very simple words. And after a certain repetition, you can pick it up quite easily.
Exactly.
And every time you buy something from Starbucks, they force you to use their own vocabulary. And this enhances their Italianness and also their iconness of the brand.
You know, I have so many examples of very weird Chinese names that someone actually translated or tried to translate from wineries, and we got into trouble with the trademark office because we realized that some of them were not really good translations and they were meaning something else, very sensitive, literally. And also naming the international products in the Chinese, as Daisy says, is probably one of the most important things you have to do. It's fascinating for me, these kind of things.
I mean, that is part of the branding.
Naming is definitely a very powerful tool.
And thank you guys for coming to the studio. I think we're gonna wrap up here. We certainly have talked a lot about Prosecco, the current situation, and what can be done to perhaps promote it, to promote the product and also the region in the future. So for our listeners, if you guys have any question to ask about Prosecco, don't be afraid to leave a comment in the comment section. And thank you, Daisy. Thank you, Matteo, for coming to the show.
Thanks, Lulu.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Lulu.